Hi, how's business?
How's business?
How's business? Welcome to How's Business, a podcast on what it's like to do business in the city of Chicago, created by the Institute for Justice Clinic on Entrepreneurship. Hey, thanks for tuning in. If you're listening to this podcast because you love the small business owner that I'm about to feature, I want you to know that we chat with lovable small business owners every week. You can get this podcast sent directly to your phone by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. Today on How's Business, we're chatting with Liz from 40 Acres Fresh Market. 40 Acres has pop-up locations in Austin and hopes to soon have a permanent grocery store there. So as I mentioned, the IJ Clinic is celebrating its 20th anniversary. As a part of that anniversary, we're hoping to learn what's going well and what could be going better for small businesses in Chicago. And I just want to take it from the top, if you could tell me your name and the name of your business.
My name is Liz Abuno, and I am the owner and operator of 40 Acres Fresh Market.
Could you tell me, what does 40 Acres Fresh Market do?
40 Acres Fresh Market increases access to affordable fresh food in underserved neighborhoods. Currently, we operate as a mobile produce market, doing pop-up markets, produce stands, and delivery service. Our goal is to open a brick-and-mortar store on the Chicago Avenue corridor in the Austin neighborhood by mid-2020.
And for folks who have never been to a mobile grocery store, what might they expect when they come to where your pop-ups are?
So a lot of people think mobile grocery, a truck or a bus that they come on. We don't even have that infrastructure. What we do is we very, very cheaply rent existing neighborhood space and transform it into a produce market.
Are you guys popping up in businesses that are already open or businesses that are vacant at the time?
Our current pop-up, regular pop-up, is the second weekend of every month at 5051 West Chicago Avenue, which is the conference room / break room at Westside Health Authority, an Austin-based nonprofit. They give us half their office and we transform it into a produce market. We've used community centers, we have used school gyms. It used to be wherever we can get space. Now that we're moving towards a store, consistency is key. And so we're in the same location.
Had you ever seen a grocery store like this? How did you come up with this idea?
I had never seen a grocery store like this, but I knew that I wanted to open a fresh market of some sort on Chicago Avenue in Austin. I knew that I didn't know what I was doing, and I was hearing competing advice about my idea in the first place. You had some people that were saying, oh my God, totally do that. That neighborhood, they need it. There's no food there. You should totally do it. It'll be a huge success. And then I had other people telling me, well, if Jewel isn't there, Mariano's isn't there, Whole Foods isn't there, there must be a reason. So they probably already done the research and determined there's no market there. So why are you doing it in the first place? So I didn't know which one was right. So I needed something that was, my friend Trisha calls it low fidelity. There's no overhead. I can just try it out. So one person told me, hey, just bring a bunch of produce into Austin, ask a church to use their parking lot and just see if you can sell it. And so that's kind of where it came from.
Yeah. So you were able to prove your concept and it sounds like you're on the road to opening an actual place. So
yeah.
It's something you've decided is a good idea?
I'm still deciding that. Grocery is a volume business. And in order to move volume, real volume, it's almost impossible to do that with just pop-up markets. You start getting into food storage issues, food transportation issues. And so having a permanent space out of which to work, it makes it easier to operate this type of business and do the volume that you'd need to do in order to be sustainable. And so the first thing that we encountered was, oh crap, you buy all this food. If you don't sell it all, it's still good. Where do you store it? How do you keep it fresh? I did not think through refrigeration when I first started. So Chicago winter was my first refrigeration. Once you need cold storage, it's like, well, you might as well have a storefront. If you're storing it someplace anyway, you might as well open up the front of it for people to shop. And so I think just by operating pop-up markets, we started thinking through, okay, how do we sell groceries? How do we move volume? How do we get people in the door? Okay, people didn't come through the door. Now what do we do? Okay, let's bring it to people so we can deliver it. Okay, set up delivery service. So the logistical parts just kind of came together. More people would come to us, especially chefs and caterers would be like, oh, wait, you sell produce? I need something for this. Can you supply me with this, that, or the third? And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess so, if you want us to. And that became a stream of revenue. And then certain nonprofits were like, hey, we do these events and we want to have fresh fruit there. Can you supply the fresh fruit? And it's like, if you're going to pay us, okay, sure. And all of a sudden, I started to see all these different revenue streams come together. And I realized I was operating a hub and spoke. So that's really the model that we're going after, is building out all of the spokes and then building a hub around which they can all operate. Ultimately, it's all about moving groceries quickly, but there's so many different ways to do that. And breaking out your business in these different revenue streams actually really helps you see where the demand is and where the business is coming from.
I'm sure we both know that once you start operating with food, the health department has a lot to say about it. Perhaps the city does too. I'm interested in what licensure looks like for your business and what it's been like to try to get fully licensed if you are. And then if you aren't, like, what are the hurdles? What's getting in your way?
Yeah. So when I first started, I went to City Hall. And I said, I want to do pop-up markets. I need a business license. Like, how do I sell produce? And they're like, so is it a peddler? Are you a peddler? I'm like, well, what's peddler? Oh, you go from place to place. Basically, you have to keep it moving. I'm like, well, that's not me. I'll be in one place. Then there was the mobile produce license where you could stay in one place, but you had to be outside. I'm like, well, I'm not going to be outside. It's winter. There was nothing for pop-up markets at the time. And so when I started in January 2018, it was basically, you have no license for what I do, so I'm just going to go do what I do. And it just turned out at that time, pop-ups became all the rage with restaurants too. So there were a lot of restaurants foregoing the city's inspection process and everything and popping up restaurants for, you know, 30 days, 6 months, wherever, in different spaces. And I think in late 2018, the city said, enough of that. We're going to start regulating these pop-ups. Unfortunately, because we sell perishable food, 40 acres got lumped in with a tier two license, which is for prepared food. And they wanted us to get a shared kitchen license. And I was like, it doesn't make any sense for us to get a shared kitchen license because we don't prepare food. So I was in City Hall and I just kept talking. And I talked to somebody, and I talked to somebody else, and then another woman who was like, okay, I'll help you out. We'll get you the mobile produce vendor license because that's the closest to what you do. And she said, just keep some of the stuff outside. That way, you know, you can kind of stick to what the license is. But I will say that produce, whole uncut produce, so you're not doing anything to it, you're just selling whole uncut produce, is probably one of the easier licenses to get in the city. Isn't like a regular inspection cycle. It basically operates on an honor system. And so, yeah, we've been very lucky.
Do you have the pop-up license in addition to that?
No, we can basically operate our quote-unquote produce stand anywhere we have permission. So the location doesn't need to be licensed. We have the license, and as long as we have their permission to be there, which we always do, we are good to go.
So whenever you were going through that licensing process, you said you spoke to a few different people. How did it feel?
It felt like a circus. I was being passed around from person to person. I don't think they really knew what to do with me. And so they finally found a woman there who had just been there forever and was like, okay, I kind of know my way around this system, because they have their guidelines, you know? And it's like, okay, well, here's what my guidelines say. You don't fit that, so I don't know what to do with you. And I think it takes somebody who just kind of knows the city and can tell you, okay, this is what's going to be best for you, what's going to work for you.
And does it make you feel uneasy at all that the way that you actually conduct business is a little bit off of what it looks like to be, like, squarely in that license category?
I think the more publicity 40 Acres gets, it could get squirrely, but we have a good relationship with the alderman. Her office is right down the street from where we operate, and if they don't have an issue with it.
What has relationship building looked like?
I started from day one. When they kept seeing me everywhere, over and over and over again, they were like, wait a second, she actually might be serious. She might be trying to do something. And so I think persistence is really key in developing that relationship. And especially if you want to work in a neighborhood that has been underserved by private business for a really long time, you'll have to build credibility.
And before you embarked on all of this, if you could, like, just rewind and tell yourself, this is going to be harder than you thought it would be, yeah, what would that thing be?
Everything. I would have said, one, you can't do everything on your own. You have capacity limits. I would have told myself, figure out refrigeration. I would have told myself, we carry between 70 to 80 varieties of fruits and vegetables. And we buy wholesale, meaning we buy by the case. Now, thankfully, I don't have a minimum case order. I can just buy one case at a time, and I'm good. However, I'm used to seeing full grocery displays, more produce than you can imagine or even use, all types of variety and high quality. And when I'm in Austin, I see very limited assortments. There are stores in a predominantly black neighborhood that don't carry greens. I'm like, are you crazy? This makes no sense. And so I wanted to provide my customers that experience of having right where you live a beautiful selection of anything you could possibly want. And I think that initially I probably should have started smaller because it's a lot of inventory to manage.
Do you think that there's something about you that makes you particularly equipped to tackle this challenge?
Accidentally, yes. I worked in the grocery industry tangentially for a decade. My first job out of college was with General Mills, and I worked in sales, so grocery stores were my customers. What's ironic is that I moved to Chicago to go to grad school to kind of pivot my career. No, not to kind of, but to pivot my career and get the heck out of grocery. I was over it. I had wanted nothing to do with groceries. And so the fact that it's been 7.5 years since I left General Mills, I'm right back in it, but now on the other side as the grocer. And there's days where I ask myself, how did we get here? How did this happen? Because this was not the goal. This was not the point of moving to Chicago.
Are you grant funded at all?
Initially, I self-funded. I took $3,000 and I invested in things like reused shopping baskets from a liquidation. So my shopping baskets say Staples. A used city certified produce weight scale bags and just like basic equipment. I spent that money and then I made as much of it back as I could. And then I spent it again, made it back and spent it again and made it back. And I did that for 6 months. And then I applied for my first grant, which was through the University of Chicago. It was for alums. It was called the Adventure Capital Challenge. So I said, I want to use this money and I want to do a test market. I've been doing pop-ups. I want to see what it's like to really run a retail store day in, day out. And I made a convincing case. And so that was our first $15,000. It funded our July test market, which was a financial failure, but a huge learning experience. So that was the first one. And what you'll learn with grant funding is once you get one, it gets easier to get more. And when we first started, there was no money out there available for what we did. But now all of a sudden, granting organizations that normally were only open to nonprofits started accepting applications from small businesses that were operating in their area of impact. Here's what I want to say about Black entrepreneurship in the areas that we're getting into. There are areas where you have to basically either bootstrap or get a loan. But if we focused on areas of particular need in our community, there's actually money out there that will fund our business with non-debt, non-equity funding, which for small business is almost unheard of. The only reason I've been able to get grant funding is not because I'm doing a grocery business, it's because of where I'm doing that grocery business.
So if we could pivot just a little bit, mm-hmm. I want to talk about what advice you would give to like Chicago's government about making it easier for small businesses to start.
I think that they could be more laissez-faire in the beginning. To ask businesses to go through such stringent licensing just to sell initially and sometimes just to test to see, because we didn't know what we were doing at first. We were just testing things out. It should be much easier to do that, especially when there's no scale to what you're doing. When you're below a certain revenue or a certain customer threshold, I kind of think it should just be like you operate at your own risk and you buy at your own risk. Let us do that before we have to deal with City Hall. Because I mean, when I first started, I was trying to get a license. I didn't even know what I was getting a license for.
And we've talked about this before, your business model has changed a lot. And so it's hard to know at the start.
Exactly. So why am I going through all of that? It's so small that it seems like a lot of unnecessary infrastructure and expense to prevent very small problems. The cost benefit for me, just I don't see it being there.
And if you could describe doing business in the city in one word, what would that one word be?
Uncertain. It's a personal thing for me in that can a business that so many say won't work in neighborhoods that desperately want and need this type of business, can we do what we said we're gonna do? Can we change people's shopping patterns? Can we come into a market against a legacy of segregation, redlining, and white flight and divestment and actually make something work from the ground up at a grassroots level? That's very uncertain. Because Chicago is such a big city and such a diverse city. And doing business in Lincoln Park is not the same as doing business in Austin, is not the same as doing business in Streeterville, is not the same as doing business in Edgewater. So where I'm at, there's just this huge level of uncertainty and hope that others are coming with me, so I'm not out there by myself. I'm not on an island.
And have you had any luck building community with the people who are already there?
Yeah, so I've joined Austin African American Business Networking Association. I have become really cool with owners of businesses like Sweet's Cheesecake and Gone Again Travel. And we talk about the challenges constantly because we all have the same ones. It's everything from how do we work together to get customers through all of our doors? How do we reverse this pattern of dollars leaving the community? How do we build a customer base when we're not here every day? And we can't afford to be here every day because we don't have enough customers to be here every day, but we don't have enough customers because we're not here every day. It's this chicken and egg thing. And many of us face very, very similar challenges. And so it's really kind of created like this ecosystem of people who just kind of get what you're going through.
Before we wrap, is there anything that's important for you to share about what it's like to do business in the city or about your business generally?
I think that there are certain neighborhoods that are in critical need of basic economic infrastructure. And so if you're thinking of starting businesses, especially if you're a minority business owner, really look to things like food supply, energy, housing, and financial services, because that's like the basic economic foundation of our neighborhoods. And I think if we focus in those areas, one, you'll find more funding and you're really going to start to own and protect where you live from encroachment.
Since 1998, the Institute for Justice Clinic on Entrepreneurship has provided free legal assistance, support, and advocacy for low-income entrepreneurs in Chicago. The IJ Clinic also trains University of Chicago law students to be vigorous and creative advocates for entrepreneurs. For more information, visit www.housebusinessshy.com.